From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for June 21st, the first day of summer 2019. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening this weekend, like the Lakefront Festival of the Arts, Taco Fest at the Summerfest Grounds, the Bloody Mary Festival at the Fiserv Forum, and the Strawberry Fest in Cedarburg. And if that's not enough, the Brewers are back home with the Cincinnati Reds. Okay, an 81-year-old Arizona man who spent decades behind bars for a series of bank robberies has created his own retirement plan. His $800 monthly Social Security check just wasn't cutting it anymore. So his plan was to hold up a credit union with a BB gun and then wait for the cops to arrest him. The plan worked beautifully. He's back in prison with three hots and a cot. I guess we all have our own definition of comfortable retirement. And finally, here's one definition of denial, and it's not the river in Egypt. A Florida man was pulled over by the cops for speeding, and then immediately noticed cocaine on his nose. He swore up and down it wasn't his. Now, if you look up denial in Webster's, you'll see this guy's picture. In the studio today, we have Mark Amateus, Steve Giles, Mike Helzel, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. Pretty good week. S&P hit an all-time high yesterday. NASDAQ up 3% this week, climbing 235 points to close at 8,032. NASDAQ up a whopping 21.7% year-to-date. The S&P stock composite 500 climbed 2.2% this week, rising 64 points to close at 29.51. Dividends reinvested, S&P up now 18.9% for the year. Dow Jones Industrial Average tacked on 629 points thanks to a 353-point advance on Tuesday and then a 249-point advance on Thursday. Dow now up, dividends reinvested 15.9% for the year, held back a little bit because of Boeing aircraft. So we close this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 26,719. Big news on the 10-year Treasury. Yield dipped below 2% a little bit on Thursday, first time since December of 2016. You know, Steve, let me start off with you. You've got the bond market showing that inflation's not going to be an issue moving forward. You got the bond market clearly telling you that economic growth is going to be slowing. You got the stock market, on the other hand, telling you that yippee, interest rates are going to be coming down here, 100% chance, according to the futures market in Chicago, that the Fed's going to lower at the end of July. Clearly, one of them's wrong.
Yeah, that's right, Bob. They both can't be right. And I think as investment managers and as prudent asset allocators, we want to make sure we maintain balance. It's very important for investors not to look at the returns on the market so far this year and extrapolate that out into the remainder of the year. Yes, we have 6 months to go, but by all accounts, if we get to December and the market has just gone sideways and we're still up 18 on the S&P, I think a lot of people will count that as a pretty good year.
So a couple of things that you and I grew up with. One is don't fight the Fed. Is a really good rule of thumb. That always isn't the best approach, though. Typically it is. Don't fight the Fed. The Fed's lowering rates. Stocks tend to do better. You and I know that stocks trade based on our expectations for future earnings. When we have to discount that future revenue stream back to figure out current value, interest rates go down, you discount it by a lower number, which results in higher stock prices. You know, we've been also taught, Steve, that stocks move based on interest rates and earnings. And the point simply is that earnings expectations out to the end of the year don't look all that good. And when you look at bonds rallying now, yields going down, I think part of that is based on this almost unanimous belief that the Fed will start lowering rates, but you got to give yourself a gut check and say, wait a minute, lower interest rates helps, but ultimately, you know, show me the money. Ultimately, you got to look at earnings to make all this come out.
Yeah, and the fact that earnings projections are going down does make one pause and wonder, when we get to the end of the year, what's going to be right? Will it be the bond side of the equation, or will it be the stock side of the equation? I think caution continues to be the best course here for investors. Everything in moderation. You want to make sure that you don't go overboard with your stock mix and pay attention to those earnings projections. You know, Bob, more companies now are projecting earnings for the remainder of the year below expectations. And that, to me, I think is a signal that we need to be ready for continued earnings disappointments maybe as we move out into the summer.
Yeah, here's something that will make you scratch your head. The effects of a rate change tend not to fully kick in for almost a year. And the Fed raised rates 4 times last year, most recently in December. And so the point is, we haven't even fully experienced the effects of certainly the last couple of rate increases. And we're already looking at lowering rates potentially starting the end of July, 69% chance that we get 3 or more rate cuts this year, according to the futures, the interest rate futures market in Chicago. So you've got these cross currents, if you will. You know, the currents created from last year's rate increases being partially offset by the decreases this year. You typically don't see the Fed do a 180 on rates that soon after having raised rates for since December of 2015?
Yeah, I mean, if you go back 18 months, Bob, well, we all were expecting the Fed and the markets were expecting the Fed to be raising rates at this point this year. In fact, everybody was still expecting them to be perhaps raising rates into 2020. But once the trade wars were announced, once we started to get into the tariffs, all that kind of was off the table. And the markets did, in fact, the Fed did, in fact, do a 180 with respect to rates because of the slowdown that was created and the headwinds that were created because of the tariffs.
Mark, let me bring you on the program now. What's your take on current events?
Well, again, I think the interest rate story is the big story. Who would have thought 6 months ago that we'd be talking about potentially 3 rate cuts this year rather than the 4 rate increases that they were talking about at the end of last year? You know, you look at some other things, inflation well under control. The Federal Reserve also changed their language from patient to, monitoring and acting as appropriate to extend the expansion. So they're clearly concerned with the economy, beyond just their mandates of employment and a stable dollar. You saw oil rise considerably this week, even in the face of lower demand because of the tensions in the Middle East. So you've got those cross currents, as you mentioned, on other things also affecting commodities like oil when you have the international problems going on. So, I think it's a real time, as Steve said, for some caution. I think the market clearly can go higher here, but I'd be a little careful right now.
You know, I'd love Jay Powell, the head of the Fed's, quote on Wednesday after the Open Market Policy Committee met, quote, "The case for somewhat more accommodative policy has strengthened," which means we're just leaning towards cutting rates. Well, we're not quite there yet, but we're leaning there. And what caught my attention was they had the press conference, as they always do after the committee met, and he said trade disruptions and slowing global growth are the two problems for the Fed now. And what strikes me about that is that they're somewhat outside the mandates for the Fed. I mean, the primary mandate for the Fed is price stability. And the second mandate for the Fed is full employment. So we've clearly accomplished full employment at this point in the cycle. We have price stability, so that in itself doesn't argue for rate cuts. So it's a little bit outside their mandate to then focus on trade disruptions and slowing growth. It's almost as if the Fed can see global trade slowing, and they can see the handwriting on the wall, and they know that if the data continues to suggest slower growth, then in fact they're going to cut rates.
You know, and you have the law of diminishing returns too, Bob. I mean, you look around the globe, a number of countries with negative interest rates on their 10-year their 10-year bonds. You know, we're getting lower on our 10-year treasury, so we've got some room to cut. But boy, at what point is there just not any room left for the Fed to use cutting in interest rates, or the other central banks around the world to use cutting interest rates to spur the global economy?
Well, that's just right. I mean, Germany and France, their rates fell to almost all-time lows this week, and now we have these expectations that around the world, central bankers are going to start favoring lower rates to boost economic growth. So I think that's what's got the stock market excited, is that if you get global central bank intervention heading towards lower rates, that's clearly going to lift the market's heart.
Well, one other thing to add to this also, it doesn't take much to recognize that even though we've got a P.E. ratio that's a bit above historical averages, we have an earnings yield, Bob, that's still at 5.9%. And 5.9 is a much bigger number than the 2 we're getting on the 10-year.
And the 2 is heading south.
Bingo.
So it's a pretty good spread. Hey, Mike, let's bring you into the show here. What's on your mind these days?
So one of the things I've been talking about with my clients is things that we've been talking about in our Monday meetings is how value has been doing better than growth. And I really think that a lot of it has to do with the way that, dividends have been performing with the value stocks. I mean, if you look at utility stocks, they're having a 3.2% dividend. And so I think those have been really driving value stocks and why people have been kind of flowing towards them, not as opposed to growth, but in lieu of growth. And so some of my clients have actually been wanting to put more, take money from bonds and put them more into value. And I've been trying to pull them back a little bit and not get them overextended, like Steve mentioned earlier, because with what we're seeing right now, obviously, things could go sideways, and I want to keep them balanced. But at the same time, we have been looking more towards value stocks as opposed to just keeping it all into growth as like the past 18 months or so.
You know, Mike, you bring up two interesting points, among others. One is that, you know, high dividend paying stocks can be bond alternatives. You know, we're comparing apples to oranges here. But so many slow growing value stocks, typically the utilities, even some of the telecoms, you know, pay pretty decent dividends, and they're quite a bit above what you can get safely on interest on bonds. So I find that somewhat appealing. And we've also noticed, as you're aware, a lot of the high-flying growth stocks now are running into the obstacles of antitrust problems in Washington, the privacy issues that the politicians are struggling to get their arms around, and the slowdown in China. You know, so much of Apple sales, even their manufacturing, coming out of China, and so that's weighing on their stock as well. So I think that's partially responsible for the shift. And as you know, it's never one side of the boat or the other. I like growth stocks still. But I think it's, to me, reassuring to see that the slow growers, the insurance companies, the banks, the utilities, the telecoms, are starting to come back to life. And the difference in percentage terms between some of those deep value stocks and the rest of the market is fairly narrow right now, considering that they have way better downside protection than the growth stocks. I think that's a particularly attractive area of the market right now. Hey, Joel, let's bring you into the program. Not many economic statistics coming out this week, but you did have a few. Why don't you comment?
Sure, Bob. The leading economic indicators from the Conference Board, that's showing us what we've been talking about here today and we've been talking about for months. That's that we're seeing more of a slowdown in economic growth. The Conference Board is now expecting that, based on the numbers that it's following, that GDP is going to be about 2% this year. So that's a step back from where it was last year, but it's still growing. The other big thing that came out this week were a couple of housing numbers. We had housing starts and building permits. Today we had numbers from the National Association of Realtors on existing home sales. And again, we're seeing homes being sold, we're seeing homes being built, but it's a slowdown. Right now, the home sales are on par with what they were in 2018, and that was the lowest home sale year that the realtors had in 3 years.
You know, Joel, economists are terrible at forecasting recessions. It's really challenging, too many variables involved. But we are capable of talking about trend lines. You know, GDP was 2.9% this year, as you forecast, that they're now estimating maybe 2% GDP this year, maybe 1.25%-ish GDP next year. So we find it very challenging because there's so many variables out there that to say precisely when the recession may occur. But we sure can ascertain that things are slowing down. Let's take a look at, I mean, you primarily comment on national indicators and data points. But one that came out, a regional indicator that came out earlier this week, the Empire State Manufacturing Survey had its biggest drop ever recorded. So that's a problem. So it shows you that manufacturing continues to decline. We shot a video that will be in the newsletter next week. Among other things, we were talking about how the benefit of lower interest rates primarily is in the construction and manufacturing area and housing, and that with manufacturing weakening and the construction trades somewhat struggling, you know, the point is how effective will lower rates be this time around? Because if manufacturing is a decline, you know, lower rates may not help him at this late point in the cycle.
And Bob, and we're going to get more numbers next week from the Commerce Department on durable goods orders. And that's a really good early indicator of, you know, how much demand there is for manufactured goods. And you're right, that's a sector that more than most in our economy is really sensitive to what's going on around the world. And as we're seeing a global slowdown, manufacturers are being affected.
So I want to close the program today by talking about one of the brightest spots that I see on the horizon, which is rising productivity rates. It's been anemic for years. What we're talking about is output per man hour worked. How many pence can you produce an hour? Been flat as a pancake for years and years. Now it's starting to pick up. But I had a couple of interesting conversations with clients this week that are very tied into manufacturing, and they said that in both these stories, that the reason why the companies are being forced into robotics is because they can't find help. So I find that as a very curious thing now with the economy at full employment, that's what's forcing productivity higher. You saw it in the newspaper this morning. McDonald's announced that they've got robotics to make French fries. You know, they tried to put a spin on it about faster service, but I think at the end it had to do with it's difficult to find employees to work in fast food and difficult almost in any occupation. So that's what's forcing productivity higher. And the point simply is higher productivity numbers drops right into the cash register. It's the only way to increase aggregate net worth besides having more workers. So the productivity rate, should they continue at this trend, could be exactly what this market needs at this point in time and could leapfrog over the entire issue of where do we find additional help as we move forward. So, you know, that's very promising. They've been working on robotics forever. The idea of artificial intelligence, machine learning, even augmented reality finally kicking into the workplace. We're just starting to see evidence of that. And I get it. We're in the early innings of this. But how refreshing was that? That, you know, after how long we've been talking about no productivity growth, and we're finally looking at it. So that to me is one of the most encouraging things.
Just to back up your point, Bob, there's actually been kind of articles and studies about how they're using automation for some of like the fruit farms down in the southern areas because they can't find enough people to work. And so they're trying to figure out ways so like the crops don't die. They're working on different robotics and automations to help out those farmers so they can pick all their crops in an efficient manner.
Maybe we get robots to teach the brewers how to pitch.
That'd be helpful.
Right?
That would
That's
be helpful.
What we need. Okay, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening to the show. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.